Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Speck.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic.
Anything new? Anything happening?
Well, you saw that I have the new hoodie, which you
that
seem to think I love.
Brighter green.
I love it.
You look like Kermit the Frog.
Yes, and then you took a picture of me holding, I don't know what they are.
They're,
I know what I want to say they are.
Accidental bombs.
Okay. Anyways, so I had the hoodie up, and it made me look like Kermit the Frog. But anyways, it reminds me, because it smells like wood smoke and kerosene. So which reminds me...
A frog legs in summer.
So it reminds me, I had a fire in the weekend, which reminds me, I had to trim my eyebrows extra short.
With the fire?
No, after the fire, because...
With the gasoline that you used to start the fire?
All the frizzy ends. So my sister-in-law came over, and she's been wanting to come over and burn some documents that are, like, aged out type thing, a whole bunch of financial stuff. So she came over with whiskey and a box of paperwork to burn. So I was getting it going with kerosene, and the wind shifted. I ducked, but as I ducked and clenched my eyes shut, I could hear all of the hairs sizzling. So good thing I had a toque on, so I didn't go bald. But I shortened my eyebrows and
hang on, and you'd look hilarious bald.
So anyways, it singed my eyebrows, and so I had to trim the singed ends off to make them extra short, so the frizzled ends, because it looked like I had, like, snow on my eyebrows. All the hairs had split and exploded. So
that's why you look different.
I can
tell. Eric got a green hoodie because he burned his eyebrows off.
I can still smell the kerosene and the wood smoke.
And the burnt eyelashes.
We had fun. We chatted, burned paperwork and stuff like that.
And other body parts. And
yes. It was a good thing I was wearing a toque. Because I would have, because my...
Well,
I was enveloped,
that's debatable.
I was enveloped in a cloud of flame.
Because what if the toque got caught on fire and you didn't realize it?
Oh, you just whipped the toque off.
Then your hair's on fire.
Safety third.
Everybody's laughing. Except you, of course. Wow. So that was your weekend.
Yes. Yes. I was burning.
Doing your brows.
Yes. Even Monday morning when I washed my face a few times over the weekend, and when I washed my face again on Monday, it's like, I still smell burnt hair.
It's a good thing, just put a positive spin on it, that it isn't like summer and you've got a deep tan.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you'd have two, like, Oompa Loompa eyebrows above you.
Well, they're not that short. They're still there, but it's as short as I've ever had my eyebrows.
That just leads into a whole bunch of other questions. What do you mean it's the shortest I've ever had? Is this a common thing?
What?
You doing your eyebrows?
I have, like, old man eyebrows. I have to trim them. They get to be like...
Does the old man know you've got them?
He wants them back.
Are those hair machine caterpillars?
You don't even have eyebrows.
I burned them all. If I'm going to do it, I do it properly. Get rid of them all in one go. Mine are so light you can barely see them.
Oh, you do have eyebrows?
I do, yeah. They're just very, very,
just
very light.
I just assume they fell out like the rest of your hair.
No, they're the only things that remain. My eyebrows are what my hair on top of my head bounced off of on the void of the floor.
So, yeah. It's normally it's a safe practice, or so I think. But I have a spritz bottle that I fill with kerosene to spray the...
Why kerosene? Why don't you just start a fire like everybody else?
With what?
Paper and a match. You had the perfect opportunity to use that new thing I got you from Kid Stoves.
Yeah.
And you didn't take the opportunity. Disappointed. Can I have it back? It was a fire starter.
Yes.
And you failed to use it. Instead, you decided to do some manscaping with fire.
Well, I was creating a fire tornado, and then the wind shifted in the backyard. And it's like, whoa. So...
Derek plays with fire. You know what they say about playing with fire?
You pee the bed?
You're going to pee the bed. Do I need to call your wife and see if you peed the bed that night?
No.
Why not? Why don't you want me to call her? Did you indeed pee the bed that night?
She was watching. She was like,
she watched you pee the bed?
She watched me light my head on fire.
Yeah. I married that guy.
Safety third.
Oh.
So, anyways, yes, that was...
So it was a good weekend, is what you're saying. Yeah. For some of yous.
And my brand new hoodie. Ah. My brand new green hoodie smells like kerosene and wood smoke.
Your Kermit hoodie.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Nice hoodie, though.
It's very colorful.
Yeah, very. It's very bright. Mind turning it down a couple of notches?
I picked it because it was this bright. I liked the color.
They'll see you from space.
Yes. Yes, they would.
They're going to be out there. Oh, there's Derek.
Yeah.
Look at him down there.
This is a beautiful hoodie.
Yeah.
I'm very happy with it.
Looks comfy.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's got weird, like, headphone pockets and a headphone, I don't know what the elastic's for, if your phone, I guess.
Because it's for your Mickey.
Nobody has Walkmans anymore.
It's for your Mickey.
Yes. Sure.
So your booze don't fall out of your pocket.
So, anyways.
All right. Well, for those listening tonight, thank you very much.
That was your weekend.
And if you ever see Derek live in person, make sure you take notice of his eyebrows. Some pretty stunning eyebrows there you have, sir.
Yeah.
Oh, my weekend was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got some stuff done around here. That was about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing too exciting. Just did stuff on the honey-do list and
excellent.
Got some work done. Took dog for a walk or 12.
Or 12.
Filled up bird feeders.
Well, if it was going to be boring, you didn't have to answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was boring. It wasn't exciting as doing my eyebrows with fire tornadoes. Oh.
All the fancy hair cutters use flame these days, I hear.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't know. Tend to stay away from them.
Yeah.
They don't give me a good rate. Yeah. Ah, man. No, didn't do too much this weekend. Just got, there's, every so often you want to go do stuff, but you just got to work. Upkeep of the home and such.
Exactly, yeah.
It's got to be done. So that later on I can go out and do the things that I want to do when, you know, the weather's bad. The blood moon happened this weekend.
I heard.
Today?
I forgot about it.
Did you
so
see it?
No, I didn't see it. People came into work and mentioned it. They go, hey, yeah, the blood moon was really pretty cool this morning. Oh, yeah, that was this morning.
Yeah. Didn't really see too much of it. Most of it was covered in cloud.
Yeah, the boys at work were saying that they did see it.
Hmm.
I missed it.
Oh, guess they were too busy sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when it was out.
Was it?
Till 6:30 this morning.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. So,
Only
another, 9,642 years till you get to see it again or something like that.
Say what?
I don't know. Everything's... The only time you'll see it in the next 300 years.
Well, it
happened like this time 2 years ago.
Well, if we what is it, 40 more years and we'll see Halley's Comet again?
Haven't we already seen that twice in our lifetime?
Not in our lifetime. Have you?
Are you
sure? Every 75 to 76 years.
Have we only seen it once then?
Are you over 75 or 76 years old?
We've seen Halley's Comet once.
We have in the 80s.
Yeah.
It'll be back in about 2035.
So we'll see it.
2037,
2040. Twice.
We will. We haven't yet.
Okay, but we will.
I'm
just ahead of my time.
Now
you got to Google. It's the eyebrow phenomenon. It's really struggling here. I can't even look at you. Yeah, Halley's Comet. Yeah, there's all these astronomical things everybody puts on the internet. It's the first time in like 100 years. And you go back and you're like, no, this happened like 2 years ago. The next full moon, we won't see another full moon for a month.
85, 86. So I was right in my guess there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next time, Uh, 2061.
Really?
Yeah.
So we'll be 81. We'll almost be dead, but not quite dead.
Yeah.
We'll have a Halley's Comet second go round party.
Sure. We'll be wearing diapers.
And? Well, if we're looking outside, we don't need the diapers because who's going to care? Just blame it on the dog.
Yeah. Look at that. I thought we were going to see it sooner than that.
No, sorry, pal.
I better get healthy then so I can last that long.
Yeah, it's like every 80 years or something, yeah.
But isn't it Apophis is going to wipe us out in 2036 or something?
I don't know. I'm still waiting for the... it was that thing when they come and zip you up into...
Cocoon?
No. The big thing that was supposed to happen, everybody gets taken
into space. Oh, what is that called?
The whatever it was called.
Starts with an R. When the spaceships suck you into the sky.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for that to happen. That's how memorable it is. Speaking of night skies.
Yes.
You see how long it took us to transition there for this segue?
Yeah.
Did you like paddling at night?
It was a tough segue. I very rarely do it.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I've done it on full moons. Gone, like, camping, it's usually you want to make sure you're not been drinking or anything like that, because it's last thing you need is, I hear them splashing out there. I don't know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I have done it. It's nice. It's just a nice. Oh, I have also done it on, like, on trips where you go until 11 o'clock at night type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're paddling.
Well, did you guys go into the nighttime when you did the,
Minas Link? Yes, we were going till 11, 12 o'clock at night.
Yeah, we did it during the Brent Run. I've done it on different canoe trips, doing some night fishing.
Yep.
Or just going out, sitting in the canoe, looking straight up, watching the stars
and the satellites
and aliens and stuff go over.
Yep, absolutely.
Andaman and Nicobar Islands off the west coast of Myanmar in Thailand, between the Andaman Sea and the Bay of Bengal.
Well, you've done this with Alan. You're on Toronto Islands.
We did Toronto Islands. Everybody the
lights the boats up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. We did the nighttime lock and paddle, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Andaman Islands there. Directorate of Information, Publicity, and Tourism has placed draft guidelines for the operation of night sea kayaking in the public domain, inviting suggestions and feedback from stakeholders and the general public. Apparently, it's a thing to do down there, or over there, I guess. According to the department, the draft guidelines have been prepared to regulate basic level night sea kayaking activities in the islands with a focus on safety, operational standards, and oversight of tourism-related water sports. The move comes amid growing interest in adventure tourism activities and the need to establish a structured framework for their conduct in coastal waters. This seems to be the way things have been going over the last couple of years, is all of a sudden the tourism is becoming, the outdoor tourism is becoming a big thing. So now different countries and stuff are being forced to put forth these rules and guidelines.
Well,
for protection.
You're seeing a lot of companies are realizing that there's a lot of tourism dollars in doing different stuff, like cave paddling. So you go kayak into a cave and then pitch dark, and or you're paddling at night, or you're doing all these different things. Then suddenly the people are going, oh, well, it's really bad for tourism if we start losing them.
So that's it. So night, no one will see.
But it makes sense that they're going to put in these protective rules to stop tour guides from losing too many tourists.
Right. Officials stated that the proposed guidelines are intended to apply specifically to night sea kayaking operations and aim to address operational risks associated with low visibility, navigation challenges, and environmental sensitivity during the night hours. The draft framework is expected to serve as a baseline for regulating operators and ensuring safer experiences for tourists and residents. Because there's nothing like coming back from one of these trips. So how was the trip? Tell me. Well, we lost grandma.
Yeah.
You got to keep it safe.
And also, like, you want it safe. You don't want to get sued. You don't want all this, that to happen. Plus, it's expensive to go rescue people.
Yeah.
It's super expensive.
Well, there's other reasons they're doing it, too. A draft document has been uploaded to the official website of the Directorate of Information, Publicity, and Tourism, allowing interested parties to review the provisions and submit their views. Tourism stakeholders, relevant government departments, and members of the public have been encouraged to examine the draft, provide inputs within the stipulated time frame. As per notification, suggestions, comments, and inputs must be submitted within 15 days from the date of publication, with the final date for receiving feedback set as March 12th, which is pretty close here.
Mm-hmm.
Department has indicated that feedback received after the deadline may not be considered during the finalization period. Tourism authorities have been working towards balancing adventure tourism promotion with environmental protection and visitor safety. So it's not just about getting people out there safely. It's about the promotion of tourism and environmental protection, which is always nice to see those hand in hand, particularly in ecologically sensitive marine zones. Nighttime activities on the sea are seen as requiring additional safeguards due to limited visibility and potential impacts on marine life.
Yeah.
We used to go fishing at night on the shore, and one of the things we would do was have a campfire right at the shore or
draw the
lights
fish in. Yep.
To draw the fish in. So if you got people out there kayaking and maybe they got a headlamp on or they've got a light mm-hmm. on the back of their boat or something like that, it's going to draw the nighttime fishies up towards yeah. your boat. Chances are you're going to hit them.
Yeah.
Right?
Whether
and depending on the
sharks,
size.
Sharks or right? whales or...
Once finalized, the guidelines are expected to provide clarity to operators and enforcement agencies on permissible practices and compliance requirements. Department indicated that the final rules would form part of a broader regulatory framework governing water-based tourism activities in the islands. These are big chunks of islands there.
Yes.
Residents and stakeholders have been urged to participate in the consultation process to ensure that the final guidelines reflect practical considerations, safety imperatives, and environmental concerns associated with night sea kayaking in the Andaman and Nicobar Islands. And it's good to get the local people involved because they're the ones that have to live there and deal with any potential fallout.
Yeah, oh, 100%.
Right,
yeah.
So that's a good thing that they're getting there. It's also a good reminder that when you're visiting other countries to do some paddling, that some paddle regulations may totally different
yeah,
than our
it
own.
May not be what you're used to, and yeah. you more than likely will be surrounded by a lot of tourists who don't have a lot of experience, which could impact you negatively yourself on your activities. And
well, know. That and you see water, you can throw your paddleboard in.
Yeah.
Well, if it's a canal in Venice.
Exactly, yeah.
No.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Right? Yeah. So, there's certain things that, just a reminder that when you do go to other countries paddling, you better check up on
specific rules that apply.
Their rules, yes. Speaking of no paddling rules, New York Harbor's human-powered fleet. Have you ever heard of the Sailforth 250?
So, this is coming up because, United States is 250 this year.
Something like that.
And so they have been doing these, the circumnavigation of Manhattan and other islands and whatever. Every summer there's this big thing mm-hmm. where they get kayakers past stand-up paddle boarders, canoes out. But not this year. Well, not for this event.
Not for this event. The Coast Guard has floated a proposal that would sideline kayaks, canoes, stand-up paddle boards, and other small non-motorized craft from large sections of the harbor during Sailforth 250. And the fourth is S-A-I-L, the number four, the letter T-H. Sailforth, all one word, and then 250, the number 250. The semi-quincentennial tall ships celebration July 1st to 9th. So it's all the big tall ships
yes.
coming in, right? Under notice of proposed rulemaking, the Coast Guard would set up two regulated areas, temporarily suspend several anchorage grounds, and establish multiple security zones around visiting tall ships and naval vessels. The NPRM defines paddlecraft as a vessel powered only by its occupants. That's going to have to change because nowadays with some of these kayak-powered kayaks
yeah.
and stuff, Anyway, the states that the operation of paddlecraft, personal watercraft, inflatable boats, and rowboats will be prohibited in regulated area B while the rule is enforced. Restricted zone would sweep across large stretches of the Hudson River, the Upper Bay, and portions of the East and Harlem Rivers, according to the Federal Register. Federal Register is like a journal for federal news and stuff like that. Sailforth organizers and federal partners say the on-water footprint will be massive. More than 50 Class A and B tall ships, dozens of gray-hulled naval vessels, thousands of spectator boats are expected for the July 3rd and 4th parade and the surrounding week. They point to an international naval review, aerial demonstrations, and extended berthing and public visitations as key pieces of the plan that will concentrate traffic and raise safety and security needs. I don't know if you check out pictures of this online, the number of boats.
So it's going to be
phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's chaos.
It'll be particularly big this year just because this is the 250th. Now, normally in like Hudson and so on down there, from what I've seen, it's you can paddle along the coastline, mm-hmm. but they will race out and chase you down if you try and cross over the river because there's so much ferry traffic and other ship traffic. And
you definitely have to.
There's a lot of stuff. So they don't want people in paddle boards or kayaks out there. And so they will chase you down and say, hey, stay close to shore type thing. And so this thing here in particular, there's going to be a lot of watercraft. You're going to, if you have small craft like paddle, like, you know, human powered craft, it's, you're going to get in the mix and it's going to be trouble. So it makes sense that they're going to say, well, okay, not for this event, please.
Yeah. Local paddlers and regular river users say those same rules would effectively erase them from the picture, cutting off community clubs and volunteer programs that launch from the Hudson on a near daily basis in the season.
Yes.
Community members say they felt blindsided by the proposal's language and worried the measure would turn public waterways into ticketed, tightly controlled viewing zones. Well, it's a big deal. And my whole thing is, you know, all it takes is somebody to miss a canoe, a kayak.
Exactly.
And especially in a tall ship.
Yeah, and some of the bigger ships, they're going to be, hopefully, they're going to be captains who know exactly what they're doing and how to, you know, mingle with other craft and how not to cut people off. But when you get water, like small watercraft, like a kayak, it's like...
And personal power boats, yeah, and stuff like that. There's going to be enough to worry about than somebody that's can't get out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, it's as much as you like to see the... You know, you don't want to see paddlers banned from places and whatnot. Sometimes it is for their own safety.
Yes.
Like I say, all it takes is one mistake, one missed paddle craft, and the event is tarnished and worse.
Yes, exactly.
The docket for the rule shows the Coast Guard accepted public input through February 17th, and the comment period is now closed with hundreds of submissions filed. Agency will review those responses before deciding whether to finalize, amend, or withdraw the proposed rule. Decision will determine whether paddlers remain shut out of much of the harbor this July, according to the Federal Register. It's 9 days. Yeah, 9 days is a big time period if you're out there for
it is.
All day, sort
and,
of.
And I feel for them if they're like for 9 days, they're like not allowed on the
river. You got June, the rest of July, August, September, like.
But you'd really like to take part if you are in a kayak club in off of Manhattan or in on the Hudson River, and it's like I want to get out there, but
with the big boats,
it makes sense.
Unless y'all just take your kayaks out there and canoes and. Just pull up the side of one of the tall ships wearing an eye patch, a hook, maybe have a parrot, a peg leg, climb the side, take over there the boat, start a war.
It's going to happen.
That'd be awesome. A bunch of pirates took a hold of one of the tall ships, started shooting cannons at other tall ships. It was hell. For the moment, many paddlers say they are preparing to watch from land. Shorelines, parks, and tears may be their best bet, and the Sail Forth schedule notes that once berthed, the international tall ships will be open for free public visitation through July 8th. Anyone determined to get an on-water view would likely need to board a ticketed spectator vessel or secure written authorization from the Coast Guard Vessel Traffic Service. Community groups say it is still unclear whether those options will be within reach for casual paddlers, according to the Sail Forth 250. Sailforth.org for more information about the event. Again, as much as you don't want to see them banned, I would not. I've seen a couple pictures of the tall ships with all the power boats and stuff.
Yeah.
Utter chaos. Yeah, I would not want to be in there.
How nervous would you be trying to pilot a tall ship and you got little kayaks crossing in front of you?
But even still, if you're in a kayak out there, you're having to watch people in boats that are rubbernecking at the tall ships.
Yeah.
You got to watch out for the tall ships. You got to watch where you're going. How are you going to enjoy it?
Oh, I know. Exactly.
Like, you're not, you're so busy watching you don't get run over or hit by another boat.
Yeah.
How can you actually enjoy being there?
Yeah, it'd be very nerve-wracking.
Right?
You'd want to stay within a few feet of shore where some of these powered boats, powered watercraft
aren't going to be.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah. Not worried out with the whole...
Not in the mix.
Yeah.
Stay out of the mix.
I mean, like, if they were to put some sort of, you know, 100-yard or 50-yard or something
you could
along the shore...
You'd have to... Do you know how you can get flags for your bicycle?
Yeah.
Get like 15-foot flags for your kayak that stick
straight up. All of a sudden, boats being passed by this flag. What the hell is that? Are you going to let them pass you like that? Nudge.
That'd be a hoot. Hundreds of little flags floating around out there.
Oh, that'd be awesome. So, you know, like I say, if the last thing you want to see is somebody get hurt.
Yes.
And, yeah. If banning people from it for 9 days is going to prevent that. Because all it takes is one accident.
Oh, yeah.
One person not paying attention. One person missing something. And then...
Yeah. Then it's not such a happy event.
Exactly. Dogs, raccoons, fox, skunks.
When you sent this to me today, it was like, oh... I never thought this could be a problem.
Neither did I. I've never heard of a rabid seal.
But it's happening.
Hoot Bay, South Africa, just south of Cape Town. What began as a normal kayak trip in the harbor turned into an utter catastrophe when a rabid seal became aggressively fixated on one particular kayak and repeatedly attempted to bite it. Robert Sivright had been guiding a group of tourists on the Animal Ocean kayak trip inside the harbor when a snapping mad seal posed a threat to the guests.
This was just recently, like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. Realizing the danger and seeking to protect the tourists in his care, Robert guided the group back to the dock, ensuring every single one of them was safely out of the water. Once they were off the water, they were and off their kayaks, the seal turned and attacked him. According to his sister, one guest said Robert shone as a real hero in a very terrifying situation. In the process, Robert sustained severe injuries to his right elbow and left hand, says his employer, Steve Benjamin. He was rushed to a medic clinic where he underwent reconstructive surgery. Thanks to rapid intervention, he received urgent medical care without delay to clean the wounds and receive the best treatment possible. Steve shared that while the company covered all direct costs of surgery and emergency room care on the day, workers' compensation didn't apply to freelance staff, which sucks. With the severe injuries Robert sustained, he requires a long and complex recovery, medical treatment, and rehabilitation that comes with hefty cost. When news of his ordeal was shared online just a few days ago, people empathized with his trauma and were moved by his heroism. Not only that, they responded with overwhelming support and generosity, contributing funds that will assist Robert's recovery and extended time away from work as a kayak guide. They raised $7,000 in 4 days.
Hmm, good for them.
So that's good. But like I say,
it's like never heard of rabid seals.
A rabid seal before. And you see the things where, you know, people are up there and there's all the seals in the along the shoreline in, you know, South Africa and Antarctica and all that sort of stuff. People take a picture and the seal swimming with your kayak.
Yeah.
And sometimes seals jumping on your boats. Yep. And the last thing you need to think about is rabid seals.
Yes.
So there was actually an article written back in July of 2025 about rabies in seals. Because this is apparently a thing now. When marine biologist Greg Hoffmeyer approaches a sleeping southern elephant seal on the beach of St. Francis Bay in South Africa's Eastern Cape, precision and calm nerves are critical. I have a syringe with a correct dose attached to a long needle. I quickly plunge it into the muscle, inject the vaccine, then jump away.
Jump away!
Good plan. Such a scene would have been unimaginable just 2 years ago because until 2024, rabies had never been documented in marine mammals.
So it's a new thing.
It's a brand spanking new thing.
Now, so far, they've only noticed it in this one area.
Mm-hmm. Hoffmeyer's cautious vaccinations reflect a disturbing new reality, not within the outbreak zone, but just beyond it. His work aims to prevent the virus from spreading into new regions and infecting other seal species that migrate between colonies. Because colonies, if you ever watched the National Geographic Channel and stuff like that, and David Attenborough and all that sort of stuff.
We see photos of these.
Hundreds of
exactly.
Them, right?
Yeah.
First known worldwide marine rabies epidemic has emerged among Cape fur seals, predominantly along South Africa's Western Cape coastline. Genetic data confirms the virus is now spreading from seal to seal without new introductions from terrestrial species. More than 60 seals have tested positive, sparking fear among coastal communities after aggressive infected seals attacked swimmers and surfers. Remarkably, no human cases have yet been confirmed, and no infections have been reported despite several documented seal attacks. Now, I don't know if it's still the case, but it's a series of needles, like, right in your stomach.
Yeah, they have to get into your abdominals.
Yeah. If you get bitten, like, if you have rabies, it's these massive, apparently painful injections you have to get. So, yeah, I wouldn't want to be bitten by a rabid seal.
Yeah, so the Cape fur seals, their typical size is 200 to 360 kilograms or 440 to 790 pounds.
Mm.
It's the size of a small cow.
Right?
And
they're bitey.
Females are smaller, usually weigh 57,120 or 225 to 65 pounds. Whew. That's
still.
Can you imagine trying to fight something like that off when it's trying to bite at you? Oh, not good.
In water?
Yeah, exactly.
Where they have the 100% advantage?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Cape fur seals form some of the densest colonies among marine mammals. Up to 2 million animals inhabiting remote islands and rocky coastlines from Angola to South Africa. 2 million potential rabid seals.
Oof.
And you said that the zombie apocalypse wouldn't happen.
Exactly. It's coming.
Their social nature, marked by territorial fights and playful biting, creates an ideal scenario for rabies transmission.
There you go.
Particularly through saliva. Younger seals roam widely, potentially carrying the virus to distant colonies, exacerbating containment challenges.
You're going to be taught about social distancing.
Right? No biting.
No biting, kids.
Yeah. Sammy Seal, stop biting. Older individuals show site fidelity to particular colonies, while younger seals are highly mobile and move freely between colonies. The most remote, closely related virus they found in other species is from a jackal sample in Namibia. This is from Leslie Van Helden, a state veterinarian in Western Cape Department of Agriculture. The jackal-to-seal transmission likely marked the beginning of the outbreak. Most of the rabies viruses in the seals are closely related to each other. she explains, indicating that the virus now circulating within the seal population. Phylogenetic analysis and retrospective testing of archived brain samples show that rabies was present in Cape Fur seals as early as 2021. This information confirms that the virus is no longer an occasional spillover, but has become endemic.
So South African jackals were trying to prey on seals, a food source.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they would nip a seal, and the seal would escape, and now the seal's got rabies.
Yep.
From a jackal that had rabies. And then with the way, just the nature of seals, with the way they play and hunt and their colonies, it just rapidly transmits between them.
Since rabies is well established in jackals across the region, it's surprising that the virus has not jumped to seals earlier.
True.
Or did it happen before and we just didn't notice, asks Fabian Leendertz, director of the Helmholtz Institute for One Health.
Might not have been looking.
He points out that the wildlife disease surveillance is often patchy, especially when you're dealing with a million seals.
Or more. It's right now more, they suspect, right? 2 million of it.
Yeah. Kim Krinow, who runs a seal rehabilitation center in Hoop Bay, said, if animals simply exist without attracting particular attention from science or authorities, a rabies infection can go undetected. We've always seen aggressive behavior in seals. It's possible that rabies was there before. We just didn't know. So if they've always been known to be aggressive, then you don't know that all of a sudden, well, those ones are regular aggressive.
Yeah.
Those ones over there are rabies aggressive.
How do you tell the difference?
Exactly.
I don't know.
Adding complexity, rabies behaves as a slow burner, with infected seals remaining symptom-free yet mobile for months, potentially spreading the virus widely before coming visibly ill. So, yeah, you could be it's just like getting a cold and passing it off to all your coworkers, and then all of a sudden,
hey,
you come down with your
and everybody's trying to wonder who got it from who.
Right? We know very little about how many animals are infected, how long the virus remains latent before symptoms appear, or how fast it spreads with a population. Challenge extends far beyond Cape Fur seals. Marine mammals, unlike terrestrial animals, face fewer physical barriers, travel vast oceanic distances, raising alarm over potential spread into pristine ecosystems.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of talk about the Antarctic regions, which is already strained by climate change. They have no idea how devastating rabies might be there. Currently, there's no practical way to mass vaccinate wild seals. Traditional oral vaccine baiting, effective for terrestrial animals, fails with seals because they primarily consume live prey.
Hmm.
So you could throw out a dead animal or something filled with medication,
yeah,
and the animals will come and eat that dead animal and get vaccinated.
Exactly.
But seals, you can't. If you scatter dead fish containing a vaccine around a seal colony, 90% of it would just sink to the bottom and be eaten by other fish.
Mm-hmm.
But at least those fish wouldn't get rabies.
Yes.
Almost no seals would consume it. Instead, veterinarians target habituated seals in urban harbors. By vaccinating the identified habituated seals in these specific areas, the potential risk of them contracting the disease will be greatly reduced. This will, in turn, reduce the risk of rabies transfers to members of the public making use of these areas. So if you know there's 10, 20 seals that usually hang around the harbor, vaccinate all of them, because if they accidentally bite or attack somebody,
the ones that are going to be nearby people, it's easy to concentrate on those populations because you have direct access,
right?
But anything remote, it's like, how do you do that?
Well, and that's the problem they're having. But like I say, with the harbor, like Robert here, who the guide who got attacked by the one, right? Like, if that seal had not had rabies, probably wouldn't have attacked him.
Yes, exactly.
Seals are also tagged for future monitoring and booster shots. Cape Town authorities have swiftly embraced the One Health approach, emphasizing interconnected human, animal, and ecosystem health. Beaches now carry warning, dog vaccinations have intensified, and a comprehensive rabies response management plan enables rapid intervention. We currently run this plan for the entire Cape Town coastline, says Greg Olofs, the head city's lead on coastal management. If we receive a report of a seal that appears to meet the case definition, which includes exhibiting aggressive behavior, then my team will respond. We go out, remove the animal, have it tested, and record whether the result is positive or negative. Remove the animal, have it tested. Back in the day, I remember when I was a kid, I was told the only way they could test an animal for rabies is by examining its brain.
So they have to be dead. You can't test a live animal.
So they go out, they remove the animal, and have it tested.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's just pissed off because you're in its territory...
Well, we killed it, but it didn't have rabies. This one didn't.
Yeah, there's a downside, I must say. Mm-hmm. He recalls the initial turning point, a rabid dog in Cape Town traced back to a seal bite. Shortly afterwards, four unusually regressive seals attacked surfers. Tests later confirmed that three of the seals were infected with rabies. That fourth one just chose bad seal friends. Globally, however, no specific protocols exist for rabies outbreaks among marine mammals. They insist that lack must be addressed and urgently. I definitely think we need them because we now see it's happening and we absolutely must respond. We don't want new pathogens establishing themselves in additional species. Ultimately, the current strategy combines vigilant monitoring, targeted vaccination, public education. For Hoffmeyer, protecting other visiting marine species such as elephant seals, regularly come to South Africa from Antarctic regions, is paramount. The smaller seal species that visit here could carry the virus in the Southern Ocean, introduce it to entirely new populations, he warns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So they're already doing the elephant seals as well, the Cape fur seals, elephant seals. But yeah, and I was just looking up online. There's lots of beach signage about rabid seals, and there's like, you know, keep your distance, do not approach, keep your dogs away. So they talk about signs of rabies in seals. So it's like abnormal behavior. How does a seal normally? I guess if you are routinely visit coastal areas, you'll kind of get used to what they do. But if they,
there's some seals like the leopard seal. Like, you don't want to be near a leopard seal.
Some of these are mean.
They are mean. Yeah. So a rabid leopard, like, what does it do? Does it follow you home and break into your house? Like, I mean, how much more aggressive?
Well, they say including extreme aggression, disorientation, staggering, foaming at the mouth, and seizures. So, and they want you to report sick animals and so on. And even still, there are, I'll show you. Hey, everybody, look at me at home. Look at my phone. Oh, yeah.
Don't touch the seals.
Yeah, so there's lots of signage on beaches.
Wow. Seal summer campaigns.
Yeah. So they're since May of 2024 or so, they've been doing these raise awareness for Cape fur seals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a risk to people, right? Human health.
Wow.
So there's a video of a aggressive seal eating somebody's lawn chair. Hmm.
If it's getting so angry, it's eating your furniture. Just leave the furniture, go home. If rabies continues to spread unnoticed among mobile ocean species, it could reach regions that have never before faced this threat. Antarctica's remote and vulnerable ecosystems with little immunity and no preparedness may soon find themselves on the front line of a crisis no one saw coming.
It's stuff like that because of the remoteness. Like, you're going to see massive declines in populations, and evolutionary wise they would get used to it. Like there's what is the furry little Australian animal that has chlamydia? Like, they just grow up, they know they have it, they all these have it,
the koala bear.
Yeah, so they all have it. And so it's just one of those things that evolutionary wise it's going to have to become common amongst them, and they'll have to adapt. But this is like with remote populations and the way that these animals interact, like with wild dogs and stuff, you might get like half a dozen. But with seal populations, you're talking hundreds of thousands of infections.
Yeah, because it's not just a herd of,
yeah, it's,
you know, a pack of 12 dogs.
So much intermingling.
Yeah, it's thousands of these things along the shoreline. Scientists warn that without urgent action, this could be just the first in a series of spillovers driven by climate change, habitat shifts, and the increasing contact between humans and wildlife. That's something.
Mm, yeah.
I didn't expect to go down the rabid seal
I know, right?
Rabbit hole. But I just saw this guide got attacked by a rabid seal, and mm-hmm. I was like, what?
Yeah, so it's one of those things, like in coastal areas like that, like kayaking and surfing and paddleboarding is very popular. So mm-hmm. you're going to intermix and intermingle with seals. And as tour guide, you're going to interact and it could go bad.
It's bad enough that you have to worry about sharks.
I know.
Now you got rabid seals. I did not have that on my bingo card.
I know, right?
Wow.
So something, if you're South in the
Africa,
area
off
or you're going on vacation in the area, it's a good thing to keep an eye out when you're in any vicinity of seals, Cape fur seals, elephant seals, and who knows what it's going to spread to. Like Antarctica, it's like, imagine the whole penguin population starts.
Oh, the penguins arise up against humanity.
The zombie apocalypse. The penguin apocalypse.
All the penguins are riding on the backs of rabid seals. They're coming to take over the world. Oh, somebody needs to make that into a cartoon.
There you go.
Take one for the team, boys. It's the penguins of Madagascar. Oh. Too much. Yeah, I never saw that coming. Like, and like I say, you're reading things. And wait. Seals with rabies?
Yeah.
That's not right. Sure enough, it is.
And honestly, I didn't think it was possible. Like, some animals are, if their blood temperature, or they're rabies,
predisposed to it.
So what is the larger rat type? They eat a lot of ticks. Possums.
Oh, possums.
So possums have such a low body temperature that they can't get rabies. So I kind of assumed that seals would be such a low temperature animal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it's not. Apparently these are warm-blooded animals. Yes. Warm-blooded mammals.
The possum also can't be killed by a rattlesnake? Rattlesnake poison doesn't affect it the same as
possums, or is it the
mongoose
Wolverine,
is the cobra.
I know is somewhat mostly immune to yeah. It just makes them go to sleep, the rattlesnake bites and stuff. But yeah, I don't know about snake bites to possums. And yeah, possums, opossums, or whatever the different species are of possum.
That's why I'm sticking with
platypuses. We're so lucky here in southern Ontario.
Yeah, we just got bears and moose that'll get you.
Bears and moose and Massasauga rattler.
Right? At least you can see a moose coming. Episode 362, we talked about paddling in the Douro River in Portugal. And if you go back and listen to that, and you think that's pretty cool.
Yep.
Paddling Magazine, they're having a live webinar, a free live webinar with Douro Kayaking Expeditions, who I believe we talked about. We'll explore what it's really like to kayak through Portugal's legendary Douro Valley.
Yes.
For this webinar, Brenna Kelly hosts two of Portugal's veteran guides from Douro Valley. Together, they have over 60 years of experience traveling, planning, and guiding sea kayak adventures across Portugal. Join them to learn what you can expect and how to best plan your paddling adventure in this scenic and flavor-rich countryside. Wine and cheese, anyone? So that's the whole thing is mm-hmm. there was all these different towns and vineyards and that you stop
you
at
self-propel
along the way.
To go on it. And
yeah.
So yeah, we that was really interesting.
The Porto and...
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah.
And I remember at the time thinking to myself, oh, I really want to do this.
Right. And then you looked into it and thought, oh, it's doable.
I just can't afford it.
Yeah. Register for the free webinar on kayak expeditions in Portugal, March 27th, 10 a.m. Pacific. Paddlingmag.com to register. You can go on there and find out about it. But I may actually register
Very
and
cool.
watch that. Mm-hmm. What is the... Oh, I still got my February calendar up. The problem with calendars on the wall is they don't self-move.
March 27th. It's like three weeks away. Three
but what is that? Away. Like a Saturday, a Sunday, a Monday, a Friday? A,
sure. I
don't know. March 27th is a Friday.
There you go.
All right.
Good Friday night thing to do.
Right? So, yeah. Go check that out. Paddlingmag.com. Wyoming. Let's talk Wyoming for a minute. Beginning this month, Wyoming Game and Fish Department will resume seasonal operations for aquatic invasive species check stations across Wyoming. Mandatory stations help ensure watercraft are not bringing invasive species of mussels into the state's waterways. Wyoming is one of the few places in the country that hasn't detected invasive zebras or quagga mussels in the water. Josh Leonard, Game and Fish AIS coordinator, says our agency is working to keep it that way and make sure these destructive species stay out of the state waters. Leonard said any out-of-state boater as well as Wyoming residents who have taken their watercraft outside the state need to go through the inspection checkpoints where certified AIS inspectors will verify the watercraft are safe and for entry into Wyoming waters. Listing of inspectors available at the Wyoming Game and Fish AIS inspection page. Just Google Wyoming AIS inspection stations and it'll take you right there. All boaters must stop when encountering an open AIS check station on their route of travel. Don't know if it's, if you're traveling through the states, if you have, or through Wyoming and not actually stopping, if you have to stop.
It seems to indicate there'd be signs like almost like a way station type thing. If you're passing across a border, they'll have a station set up. I imagine there's going to be very clear signage.
Best defense against AIS is vigilance by the public. Watercraft owners can make their check station faster if their watercraft is correctly prepared. Game and Fish has special instructions on how to clean, drain, and dry your watercraft before hitting the water this spring. Boaters should remember many things here. And then, of course, when most of the stuff they talk about is motorboats.
Yes.
Right? But it does pertain to paddlecraft as well. Any watercraft transported in Wyoming from March 1st to November 30th must undergo a mandatory inspection by an unauthorized inspector prior to launching on any Wyoming waterway. And see, that's the thing for me is before launching. But if I'm not going to launch...
But they... People are... There's a lot of dishonesty. It's like, well, I'm not going to... I'm just passing through the state. I'm not going to launch my watercraft. And maybe they'll say it because they want to bypass the inspection station or whatever. Like, it's everybody has to do it. It's just like a transport truck way station. Everybody stops or they chase after you.
Yeah. If the watercraft was used on a water suspected or positive for invasive mussels in the last 30 days, it must be inspected prior to launching year-round and may require decontamination. Too big of a word. If boaters entering Wyoming do not encounter an open AIS check station on their route of travel, it is the boaters' responsibility to seek out an inspection before launching on any Wyoming waterway. Inspection locations may be found on the Game and Fish AIS website. Along with watercraft registration, watercraft used in Wyoming waters must have a Wyoming waters... a Wyoming AIS decal. The decal must be displayed on all watercraft, including rentals, using Wyoming waters, with the exception of soft and hard-sided stand-up paddleboards. Amphibious vehicles propelled by wheels and non-motorized inflatable watercraft 10 feet in length or less. Huh. While these watercraft are not required to have a decal, they still require an inspection when coming from out of state. Boats must stop at established check stations each time a boater passes a check station. Inspections are available by Game and Fish regional offices, but you must call ahead. So each time you pass a check, so if my route takes me past 10 of these, I've got to stop 10 times.
Unless you have the seal.
Right? But still, you still have to stop and say, here's my seal.
Yes, you stop. Look, I have the seal. I've already been inspected.
They better be at like a restaurant or a donut shop or something. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Watercraft may launch without further inspection if the watercraft has properly affixed seal applied by the authorized inspector and is accompanied by a valid seal receipt. During the transit, person transporting the watercraft may remove the seal immediately prior to launching on the destination water and must retain the seal and valid seal receipt while on the water. So it's just like your fishing license.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to have it on you while you're fishing.
Inspection sticker, please.
Even if a watercraft has been previously inspected and has a valid seal and seal receipt, boaters are still required to stop at any open AIS check station. Having the properly affixed seal and valid sealed receipt will expedite the inspection station. So can I just drive by with it hanging out the window?
Yeah, I don't think so. You can see a lot more counties, states, provinces, regions are, they're becoming much more aware of the risks to, these invasive species, whether it be zebra mussels or some sort of plant or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So it's starting to become more and more prevalent, the awareness of it, but there's also the potential damages to local fish populations and plant populations and so on.
But what Wyoming's doing is no different than what Alberta's doing.
No, exactly. Same, right? Yeah.
It's a good practice to clean your boats to help prevent the invasive species, especially if you're going from waterway to waterway to waterway to waterway sort of thing.
A little bit of learning ahead of time to prepare yourself mentally.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to be a lot more places requiring inspections, although some are voluntary, others are not. Like I say, Alberta and Wyoming sort of deal. So if you got to do it, you got to do it.
Yeah.
There's also a lot more people. Even Alberta's been floating the idea, was floating the idea last year about fees for boats, including battlecraft.
So you see a lot of these.
They say will go towards.
They say, but they generally go to general revenue. The things get funded and paid for, but I don't know. It's if you can prove it's not a money grab, people will be more engaged. But if it starts to feel like a money grab, people are going to find ways around it.
You know what? I've been looking at some of these different fees that are being talked about and stuff. And one of the, like I say, a lot of people say, if it's $5 for the year, here's my $5.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Other people are like, okay, because I think the Alberta one, they were talking 15.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no clarification. Is it per person, per household, per boat?
Exactly.
Because the one guy says, I got like 3 canoes, 4 kayaks, 2 dinghies.
And they're all purpose use.
It was going to cost him like $300 a year in stickers.
Yeah. Going to add up.
That is ridiculous.
And then you're going to start saying, well,
you can only paddle one at a time.
I won't use this one this year. And so now you're limiting yourself from using some of your watercraft because, I didn't pay the fee. I can't use this one.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. But I don't mind. I would be very annoyed if I, like I say, my route took me past 5 or 6 different.
I know.
And I had to stop 5, 6 different times.
Just passed one of you guys an hour ago.
Right? I don't mind stopping at the first one at the border.
Yeah.
But if I got pass.
Yeah. Every major city, every major park.
Yeah.
Like at the entrances to parks and exits of parks, yada, yada, yada.
Hey. Mind you, I came out from a trip on Opiongo in Algonquin Park, and they had the portable contamination station.
We saw one when we came out from our.
Oh, was that? Yeah, that was you and the Complete Anglers.
Complete Angler trip.
Yeah. That's right. It was just south of the. Yeah. As you were coming back.
We chatted
past
with them and.
Yeah. Young guy there.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff like that, if they're the pop up places on popular places. Pop up places at popular places.
At popular locations.
Popular locations. You don't mind that. And, hey, yeah. Go ahead, spray your stuff on my boat before I take it home.
Yeah, yeah.
It saves me having to wash it when I get home.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, anyway, so if you're in Wyoming, remember, if you're in Alberta, season's coming.
And don't be surprised when you start seeing this come to other general areas.
No.
Because it's the risk of invasive species is we really miss the boat with a lot of this stuff. Like the Great Lakes are just
Yeah.
They're just so racked full of zebra mussels and other invasive species, and people bring weird fish in from other countries thinking that they want them
as a pet. And their bilge and stuff.
Well, yeah. But also people bring them in as pets, so the pets outgrow, and they... Because what we had, like, caiman, which is like an alligator crocodile thing, in a park in Toronto because...
Oh, Grenadier Pond.
Because they're too big for their house, so they just release them in the wild. It's like...
Massive goldfish.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, massive goldfish as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Grenadier Pond, downtown Toronto. Oy. I got one more... A couple more thingies here. So I saw this one. About fires. JK has issued a safety warning for his e-fins. Because the first thing I saw is about they're telling you possible fire risk on your...
Paddleboard.
On your paddleboard fins. I'm like, wait a minute. They're underwater.
Who paddles that fast?
but wait, it's underwater. How is it catching fire? What kind of fire are we talking here?
I paddle at Mach 1.
They've issued a safety warning for its e-fins. The manufacturer is asking all owners to refrain from charging the devices for the time being. Reason for this is possible fire risk with deeply discharged lithium-ion batteries. I've never heard of that before. Deep discharge is possible, especially after long winter break.
Yeah, so it goes super dead, and then, so a lot of these batteries, they become, and Samsung's known for it, or had been known for it, but they still have problems with electric car batteries, because when they do get deeply discharged, and then recharged from that dead condition, they swell up. And as soon as they swell, if you swell something up in a casing, then it pushes into other components and it'll burst, and you get impingement, and it just bursts the battery and it catches fire.
So that's what we used to do. We used to have the trickle chargers for our motorcycles over the winter.
Yes, so keep it on minor charge. Yeah.
Company emphasizes there's no danger from uncharged devices. The measure is purely a precautionary measure. JK is currently working on a solution to reliably recognize deeply discharged batteries. Corresponding instructions are to be published within the next 4 weeks on the specially created status page, JK, that's JAYKAY-sport.de/pages/safety. Until then, the recommendation is to not charge the e-fin. According to the manufacturer, non-charging poses no danger.
Don't charge it, stop.
Yeah. In the meantime, they've announced that a new power supply unit is to be introduced to rectify the problems. So does that mean...
It'll slow down the cycle.
Are they going to hand those out for free to...
Of course not.
to current buyers?
Well, when I looked online, too, they said that it was... right on their website, you go to their website, and it talks about software updates coming for some of these. And so you can see this is a known issue. We talk about this at work all the time with different battery-powered carts and tow motors and so on. Like, there's a real risk of a lot of these lithium-ion batteries because they hold such a massive amount of energy that if you're charging like a drill or whatever, you could end up having a house fire. So that's the risk. You don't want to be charged. You got to figure out some way to charge these things in a safe way that you don't leave them on charge, whether it is the JK fin fire condition or if it's your Milwaukee hand drill, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those things when you charge stuff like, what was it? Is it what? 2000, I can't remember when it was, but Samsung, they were banned from aircraft for a while because they were the phones were catching fire.
Yeah.
So it's these high output batteries have a lot of hidden energy.
Warning is aimed at all owners of the e-fin from the manufacturer, regardless of how often they use the device or how old it is. Company has set up a dedicated email address for queries. safety@jk-sport.de. There, affected users can report questions about security warning. So if you've got any questions, that's the place to
reach
go.
Reach out. Yeah.
So, and this is a, just like you have your fin on the bottom of your paddleboard.
Yes.
And there's this round.
This is propeller.
Propeller in the middle of it.
So this is just something that, so when you have removable fins on your stand-up paddle boards, this just replaces that removable fin. It's all, it's an enclosed unit. And there's other stuff. There's like, there's lots of different models of stand-up paddle boarding where you can be powered because, I don't know, most people when it comes to watercraft, we haven't figured out how to do it with normal kayaks and canoes as easily yet, but stand-up paddle boards, a lot of them are powered now these days.
Kind of takes the fun out of it.
Or adds fun. There's a hydrofoil one that I've seen out there. You can get it up to like 50 kilometers an hour on when you're foiling, and they're fast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the Toronto Adventure Show there, we saw some of these stand-up paddle boards, and there comes a point where the kayaks and the paddle boards are no longer kayaks and stand-up paddle boards.
Oh, exactly, yeah. So some of these fishing, and I've shared it with you and Alan, where you see somebody out on a fishing kayak, and there's like, there's fish finders and computers and cases, and they have like six or seven fishing rods hanging off the side and coolers, and then you have the propulsion system, and it's like, oh my goodness, this is like a tiny, tiny little warship.
Well, they invent those things, and then they realize they forgot to put a place for somebody to sit.
Yes.
So much other crap on
them.
There's
so much stuff on them.
Again, each to their own.
Yeah.
Yeah, so don't use your fin.
Yeah.
Outdoor shows. They're still going on.
They are. We're getting to about the middle to the end of the season.
Yeah, getting close, yeah. Canucopia, March 13th to 15th, Madison, Wisconsin, the Alliant Energy Center. It's coming up, but that's like next week.
Yes, it's coming up soon.
Everything and anything to do with paddle sports under one roof. There is so much to see and do there, like the biggest thing ever. I definitely want to get back to that one. Rutabaga.com for more information on tickets and locations and presentations and everything. Outdoor Adventure Show. There's still one in Calgary and Montreal. Calgary is March 21st to 22nd, Stampede Park, BMO Center. And Montreal, March 28th to 29th, Palais des Congrès. Outdooradventureshow.ca for all info on these locations. If anybody saw the video we posted on our Facebook page, Kevin Callan was at the one in Vancouver.
Oh, yes.
Friends of ours were in Nanaimo, BC, and they were going to take the ferry across to go see the show on a Sunday. And I said, when you're there, go up to Kevin and whisper, Sean from Paddling Adventures Radio is watching. He has eyes everywhere. They showed up with t-shirts.
Custom t-shirts.
That said, Kevin, Sean is watching. Yeah, that was awesome. That was absolutely awesome. Paddle Partners for Life, Carrie and Paul there. Great people out there, and that's what they're doing out there now is living large.
Yes, absolutely.
Enjoying their freedom, retirement, and all that sort of stuff. So check out outdooradventureshow.ca for all info on the Calgary and Montreal locations that are still yet to come. Ottawa Outdoor and Adventure Travel Show, April 25th to 26th. Nepean, Ontario at the Nepean Sportsplex. Free admission and parking. Great, some outdoor gear and equipment, paddlecraft. AdventureOttawa.ca for more info. And Lock and Paddle has been announced for Lachine Canal in Montreal, July 11th. I haven't seen anything about Ottawa and Peterborough, but they're usually all the exact same
day. Yeah, generally
the
same weekend, yeah.
So I don't know why there's only been announced for Lachine.
Yeah.
So July 11th, Ottawa, Peterborough, and Lachine Canal in Montreal. Go out and do the Lock and Paddle. You get a ton of people together in one of the locks, and
it's a blast.
I've now done Peterborough and Ottawa. We did Ottawa last year, so Montreal is the only one I have left.
Let's go.
So other than that, you got anything else?
Got nothing else,
really. Why?
We've covered it all. We were very thorough.
We were thorough today. It's been that long already, too. Alrighty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Just Google Paddling Adventures Radio.
Yep.
And it'll list 60 to 70,000 million places that we're located. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com. You can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.
Bye.